නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස last couple of weeks we were discussing බහුධාතුක සුත්ත in මජ්ක්‍ධිම නිකාය so it is literally means many kinds of elements so different meanings are given related to elements as well as the sense bases and Buddha keep explaining about the Parisamuppada. So the whole reason came because of a kind of a comment made by the Buddha where he mentioned that all different kinds of man-made fears happens because of a foolish person. We can say because of a fool. But on the other hand, there can't be any fear because of a wise person, because of a good person. On the other hand, he further mentioned that all different kinds of troubles happens because of fools, but not because of the wise. Similarly, all different kinds of calamities can happen because of the issues happening through a fool but not because of a wise man. So after that he give a kind of another comment. The fool brings fear, the wise man brings no fear. Similarly, the fool brings trouble, wise man brings no trouble. Fool brings calamity, the wise man brings no calamity. And so he advised the monks that you should train yourself, we shall be wise men, we shall be inquirers. So this is the kind of root cause for this whole sutta to come up. And in the occasion, Venerable Ananda was participating, and so he is asking the interesting question. Kittavatanuko bhante pandito bhikkhu vimansakoti alang vachanayati. How one can say there is a wise person? How one can become a wise person? How one can say that he is a wise person or an inquirer? And then Buddha mentioned four criteria for one to become an inquirer or for one to become a wise person. Dhatu kusalo cha hoti, ayatana kusalo cha hoti, parisa samuppada kusalo cha hoti, thana thana kusalo cha hoti. So there are four criterion given here. Skilled in elements, skilled in bases, skilled in dependent origination, and skilled in what is possible and what is impossible. So these are the four categories, four areas that Buddha particularly mentioned that one needs to know, one needs to inquire, one has to have a fair amount of proficiency, not merely theoretical understanding, but some practical experience, practical understanding of these are required for one to say that he is a wise person. Or he is an inquirer. Then Venerable Ananda asks, Dhatu kusalo bhikkhuti alang vachanayati. Kittavatapana bhante dhatu kusalo bhikkhuti alang vachanayati. So how, Venerable Sir, that a bhikkhu can be called or skilled in the elements? And then Buddha went on explaining different sorts of elements. So first he gave the 18 elements, which we already discussed some of them. Chakku dhatu, chakrupa dhatu, chakku vinyana dhatu, all that we already discussed. So based on each sense organ, there are three points or three elements. So that is the sense organ itself. During its function, we can say it is the chakku dhatu for the eye sense organ. And then the rupa dhatu, that is its corresponding outside object, that's the rupa dhatu. And as a result of their combination, the chakku vinyana dhatu, that is the eye consciousness element, happens. Everywhere the term elements actually emphasize the non-personal or non-self attribute. All this happens due to causes and conditions without a participation of a self, without a participation of a soul. So that seems to be the main emphasis where Buddha is emphasizing that there is no such person, there is no such self even though certain activity is taking place. Now, another explanation is based on some known facts to us. Chaima Ananda Dhatu, there are six elements. Patavi Dhatu, Apo Dhatu, Tejo Dhatu, Ayo Dhatu, Akasa Dhatu, Vinyana Dhatu. That also we discussed last time. This is somewhat common. And these things are actually something that we need to practically experience. We should know how to experience Patavi Dhatu. We should know how to experience Apo Dhatu, Tejo Dhatu, Ayo Dhatu. And these are the four elements typically we take for very popular Dhatu Manasikara meditation, the elements meditation. Even for that, one needs to have certain amount of concentration already available, certain amount of mindfulness already developed, certain amount of clear comprehension. And with that, one can start experiencing the manifestation of these different elements. And you all are familiar with that, and we already discussed about that as well. Taking certain examples from the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta. So Buddha giving certain examples, taking from our internal, so-called internal, the body. Body is considered as internal elements, but later when one develops the elements meditation, that division, the internal and external, that demarcation become blurred, disappeared, so that elements become mere elements. So likewise, on the other hand, we can say when one has thorough understanding of elements, he will basically become disenchanted about all this. Now say for example, if one practices elements meditation using Patavi, Apo, Tejo, Vayo, so then the whole physical world, we can say the whole physical objects, might not attract its mind. So they become very much like empty. They become invaluable, or we can say a kind of merely elements. There is no such object, and therefore the mind does not find any interest in them. So mind become more disenchanted, dispassionate towards them, and ultimately the whole physical realm become very much like relinquished. And basically mind will relinquish it. Ultimately there is no grasping. So one can say, as a result of the Kaya Anupassana, elements meditation, one has detached from the whole physical realm. So the mind remains unattached, unassociated, unestablished. So likewise, the understanding of the elements help us to develop certain amount of dispassion. Because when we give very certain amount of an importance, and again we made something, then our minds easily get attracted, easily get deluded. Ultimately, easily we tempt to attach and grasp, and ultimately suffer. But when one has fair understanding about all this, then this grasping becomes less and less. Ultimately, mind gives up, relinquish, let go, and then the mind becomes free. Now, after explaining these six elements, then he went on explaining the Chaima Ananda Dhatu, Sukha Dhatu, Dukkha Dhatu, Somanasa Dhatu, Dhomanasa Dhatu, Upekka Dhatu, Avijja Dhatu. So, in terms of the feeling tone, now he explains the elements. Therefore, the elements are not merely, you are talking of the physical realm. Even at the feeling level, Buddha introduced this term Dhatu. That is also impersonal. That is also the non-self. Sometimes we tempt to think that I am suffering, I am happy. So we attribute a self, as a person, into the experience. But really there is no such person. There is no such person who is going through happiness. Even though we conventionally say there is I am happy or you are happy, so are you happy? So we are using various terminologies to discuss, to communicate. But as we can see from the experience or through our own analysis, inquiring, ultimately all these are mere feelings which doesn't belong to a person. And then now we can start today's part. So after that explanation was given, then actually Buddha, the Venerable Ananda asked another explanation. Siyapana bhante anyopi pariyayo yatha dhatu kusalo bhikkhuti alang vachanayati. So bhante, is there any other method, another scheme which you can say that one person is skilled in elements? And then Buddha mentioned, yes, there can be, there is. And then again he introduced six elements. Now here it is based on the vitakkas, different kinds of thoughts. Kama dhatu, nekkama dhatu, vyapada dhatu, abhyapada dhatu, vihinsa dhatu, avihinsa dhatu. That means the sensual desire element, renunciation element, ill will element, non-ill will element, cruelty element, and the non-cruelty element. Now this, here you can see that the element, the term element is introduced here. Even the thoughts are merely elements. Thoughts also doesn't belong to any person. Even though sometimes we talk telling I thought like that, this is my thought, this is my idea, this is my brilliant idea, or I couldn't think like that. So every time when we are talking, probably we attribute a person, I, ego, into the thinking process. But thinking happens without a passive participation of a person. So that's a very interesting point. How thoughts are happening without an interruption of a person. Actually, in conventional terms, we can say, I am thinking, or I am thinking because you asked me to think. So likewise, for our thinking, we ourselves can influence, and again someone else can influence, and automatically also sometimes thoughts happen. So therefore, in mundane terms, we consider a participation of a person. But as we can see deeply, ultimately, so things are happening without a participation of a self. Even though thoughts are there, there is no such thinker. Thoughts without a thinker. As in the book, Mark Epstein's book, Thoughts Without a Thinker. So there are thoughts, but there is no thinker. So typically, the usual understanding is, whenever there are thoughts, so those thoughts belong to me and I am the one thinking. So this is how we interpret. But more and more when one becomes mindful and develop with this wisdom, so there one may understand, okay, there are thoughts, they are merely thoughts. They have the nature to come and go, appear and disappear, arise and pass away. And you simply become an observer, and that observer is also a not-self. So that's a different, difficult part. Probably one can understand, okay, thoughts are merely thoughts and I don't need to claim them, I don't need to worry about them, they come and go. But who is the person who is knowing the thoughts? There should be a person. So this is the argument. This is the logic sometimes people introduce. But that is where the area Buddha particularly mentioned, vinyatarang na manyati. So there is no vinyatara. That means there is no a person who cognizes. There is no self who cognizes. Cognition can happen without a participation of an agent, without a participation of a self. And so here, this introduction given by the Buddha, kama dhatu, nekkama dhatu. So there are sensual desires, but they are also merely sensual desires which does not belong to anyone. There are renunciative thoughts, that also renunciative thoughts does not belong to anyone. Similarly, there are thoughts of ill will, that also doesn't belong to anyone. And there are non-ill will, maybe loving-kindness thoughts, that also doesn't belong to a person. And similarly, vihinsa dhatu, that's the cruelty, different kinds of cruelty, cruel type of thoughts. That's also impersonal, that's also non-self. And again, the non-cruelty, that is also non-self. Thoughts are merely thoughts. Now we are coming to different levels, how the elements can be introduced at various levels. We started probably with the one can start probably with the physical realm, patavi dhatu, apo dhatu, tejo dhatu, ayo dhatu. But anyway, that same application is possible even at the mental level. So different desires are there, different kinds of anger or resentments are there. So rather than taking them as personal, one can see that there are certain causes which are causing them. As a result of that, they are coming up, they are popping up, but there is no a kind of owner to them. But anyway, this doesn't mean that you can simply say that there is no person, then nothing to worry. I can simply think any of anything. I can do anything because there is no person, there is no self, there is no one to be responsible. So one can argue like that as well. But the problem is, there is a mere superficial logic, reasoning, but not without proper understanding. So one can say, if there is no self, then what is the issue that if you even kill a man, at the outside end also there is no person, and I also can't say I killed him, because there is no I here, there is no person here, then nothing to worry. One can make an argument like that. But the issue is, you are completely ignorant, and the mind is fairly conditioned by craving with many defilements. So you are not operating with that deep understanding of non-self. The understanding of non-self is not there. Rather, the mind has become completely deluded, and you are operating based on a kind of a wrong perception. So whenever we are talking of the elements and the non-self, basically we need to understand that we have to internalize it. We have to understand it. We have to operate while being there. So non-self teaching can't be simply used as an excuse. So one has to realize it, one has to dwell there, and there can't be any ignorance at that moment in the mind, and you become more ethical, more restrained, because there is no influence coming from any defilement. So when the non-self teaching is operating in one's mind, there is no any defilement operating in one's mind, because the mind is at a very wise level. So mind is already inquiring about things. It can easily understand what is good and what is bad. So therefore it may be quite easy for one to maintain one's morality, sila, if one is maintaining the non-self. If one is dwelling in non-self, because his mind is equipped with wisdom, enforced with wisdom, strengthened with wisdom, because he is experiencing non-self, he's established there. Now, even though there is no self as such in him, he doesn't get into any kind of an argument or any kind of a attack, because the roots are not there. Lobha, dosa, moha, the greed, hatred, delusion, those are not operating, because his mind is fairly at a very wise level. So therefore, mere argument or mere reasoning is not enough. So we need to experientially understand these things, and then more and more we have to dwell in that. Say, for example, dwelling in emptiness means that there is no self. And now, after given that explanation, now Venerable Ananda is asking another explanation. Siyapana bhante anyopi pariyayo yatha dhatu kusalo bhikkhuti alang vachanayati. Bhante, is there any another criteria which one can say one is skilled in the elements? And then Buddha introduced three elements. Tisso ima ananda dhatuyo. There are three elements ananda. Kama dhatu, rupa dhatu, arupa dhatu. Now we are getting to another sphere, another domain. Now, so far we were very much like an experience-based one. Now here Buddha introduced kama dhatu, rupa dhatu, arupa dhatu, sense sphere element, fine material element and the immaterial element. Now we all are in the kama dhatu, we are in the sense sphere element. So this whole human realm, whole animal realm, all these the so-called environment, the physical environment, what we are experiencing, this whole mighty earth, and we can say all these solar planets. Now everything we can consider as the kama dhatu. And again, even the celestial realms, we can consider as the kama dhatu. So they are, we can say a certain amount, they are physical, and we are using them, we are making use of them, and our food and all are dependent on that. So very much like we are based on the kama dhatu, we are based on the sense sphere element. So for that to operate, we have our senses, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and the mind. So the eye, ear, nose, body, now that is completely in the operating in the sense sphere element. In the sense sphere, the world we can see, kama loka. Now we can see that the kama loka also Buddha introduced as an element. So when someone is mastering this non-self, he's expanding non-self to various levels, there he understands, okay, they are merely elements. And so he, through his own understanding, he is gaining that wisdom, gaining that insight. It is not that he is trying to impose it forcefully. Rather, through his understanding, he is expanding his knowledge. Probably he is first understood about the internal elements, Patavyapo Tejo Vayo, but then inferentially he understood about the external Patavyapo Tejo Vayo, and later he understand, okay, they are merely elements. There's no point of giving any value to internal elements because they are also elements. What is available outside are also elements. So likewise, so it's a kind of, now one is generalizing the whole understanding. So he can generalize the whole thing now. Not superficially, but through his experiential knowledge. So he has gained certain amount of understanding through his practice. Now he is expanding that knowledge to vast area, so that internal, external, that demarcation become not available, completely eliminated, and he see that whole kama dhatu, whole sense sphere is mere elements. And similarly, if one is talking about the arupa vachara loka, now arupa vachara brahma loka, now different brahma realms are there, corresponding to each and every jahana. So for example, for first jhana, three Brahma realms are typically explained in the Buddhist cosmology. That is called the Brahma Parisajya, Brahma Purohita and Mahabrahma. So those are the three Brahma realms introduced for the Rupavachara Brahma realm, Rupavachara jhana. So likewise, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, all come up basically with the 16 Brahma realms, I think 12 Brahma realms. So that those are belong to the material realm or fine material realm, Rupavachara. So their bodies are very much celestial and is kama made. There is no gross body as such for us. And so it's a opapatika, so instantaneously they are born based on the kama. But here also Buddha introduced the dhatu. So therefore it is not only for the sense sphere, even to the fine material sphere Buddha introduced the elements, the term dhatu. Those are also dhatu. Not only that, then he get on the dhatu to the arupa realm, Arupavachara Brahma realms. ආකාසානංචායතන විඤ්ඤාණංචායතන අකිංචඤ්ඤායතන නේව සංඥානාසඤ්ඤායතන. So those are the arupavachara brahma realms. They are also, he introduced the term dhatu, the immaterial element. Now probably one can see that kind of an expansion is there about this understanding. So one may have started doing anyone's meditation using one's own internal manifestation of the elements. Later, as a result of its progress, he may be able to expand it to the outside, still in the sense sphere element. And later, probably he may be experiencing certain amount of jhanic experience as well, but that is also a mere experience. Even one is really reborn in a the fine material realm, so that is also a realm which one can say it is also elements. There is no self even there. Similarly, even when one is born in the arupa realm, immaterial realm, that is also an element. There is no person there. There is no any almighty God who is controlling all these, or intrinsically there is a certain sense component in any of these. So everywhere, therefore, we can see the non-self. So you can remember probably there's a very beautiful verse uttered by Adimutta Thera. So when he was an arahant, and he was caught by the bandits. They are about to kill him, and he simply say, "Tinakatta samang lokam yada panyaya passati." So he see this whole realm, the whole universe, mental, physical, internal, external, sense sphere, fine material sphere and immaterial sphere, all that as like thina katta saman loka, like simply there is nothing worthy, nothing attractive. They are like little grass, they are like fire sticks, completely useless. There is no self, there is no any essence. So he see that through his wisdom, not that as a superficial, dogmatic type of statement, but he understood it. And when he is operating at that level, there is no any fear coming to him. So he fearlessly state that the chief of the bandits. So very interesting areas now we are exploring. You can see that the term is expanding to everywhere. So the non-self is a very thorough teaching. It's basically expanded at everywhere. So in someone's experience, in someone's manifestation in the physical realm, and then his correspondence with the outside world, this whole sense realm, then even the fine material realm, then the immaterial realm. In the mental side, we can say different kinds of thoughts. Now all that are merely elements. Now here actually I like to introduce a little another sutta, a part of sutta. It's called Nissaraniya Sutta. Nissaraniya Sutta, literally translated as escape. Tisso ima bhikkave nissaraniya dhatuyo katama tisso. So Buddha mentioned, monks, there are three elements of escape. What three? Elements of escape. Kamana metan nissaranam yadidan nekkhamma. The escape from sensual desires, that is renunciation. Rupana metan nissaranam yadidan arupam. The escape from form, that is the formless. Yankopana kinchi bhutang sankatang parisamuppannam nirodho tassa nissaranam. The escape from whatever has come to be, from whatever is conditioned and dependently arisen, so that is that escape is called the Nirodha, the cessation. So this is not in this sutta, but Buddha mentioned this in the Iti Uttaka. So that is one of the Kuddhaka Nikaya book called Iti Uttaka, where Buddha introduced these three escapes. That is also he mentioned as elements. So, kama nissaranam nyatva rupanancha atikkamam sabba sankhara samatam pusang athapi sabbada. So he further explained, having known the escape from sensual desires and the overcoming of forms, one whose energy is always ardent reaches the stilling of all formations. Save sammaddaso bhikkhu yato tatha vimuchyati abhinya vosito santo save yoga tigo muniti. Such a bhikkhu who sees rightly is thereby well released, accomplished in knowledge, at peace. That sage has overcome all bonds. So the basic idea is that one can develop one's wisdom and escape from everything, basically. One becomes freed. So one can realize the Nibbana on the other hand. Now Nibbana, is it an also an element? Now that is the question one might have now. So now we were talking about all these and still we are in the conditioned realm. Even though we call thoughts, even though we call physical realm, even though we call sensorial realm, fine material realm, immaterial realm, still we are talking of conditioned phenomena. How about Nibbana? Now, after Buddha's explanation, Venerable Ananda asks another question. Siyapana bante anyopi pariyayo yatha dhatukosalo bhikkhuti alang vachanayati. Bante, is there any other way in which a bhikkhu can be called skilled in the elements? And Buddha says, yes, Siyananda, yes, Ananda, it is possible. Deima ananda dhatuyo. There are two categories of elements. What are they? Sankata dhatu, asankata dhatu. The conditioned element and the unconditioned element. Sankata dhatu. That means all the conditioned phenomena. So different conditions are there, different reasons are there, causes are there. As a result of that, things manifest. As a result of that, things comes to be. This whole human realm, the animal realm, different lower realms, say celestial realms, Brahma realms, and if we consider about our own experience, maybe the feelings, thoughts, all that are conditioned phenomena. So what we are experiencing are basically vast amount are conditioned phenomena. They are patisaupanna. They are subject to arising and passing away because they are conditioned. There are three lakkhanas or three characteristics. Buddha explained about this sankata, this conditioned phenomena. Upado panyayati, vayo panyayati, ritasa anyatattam panyayati. There is a beginning, one can see a beginning, one can see a passing away, fading away, complete disappearance, and in between, continuous change. And these are the three characteristics typically available for all conditioned phenomena. Now that is also, all that are elements, all that are sankata dhatu. So there is no person involved, there is no self involved, there is no any almighty God involved, all are elements. Now Buddha went on to introduce elements to the asankata dhatu, asankata level, asankata dhatu. Even the Nibbana, Buddha introduced elements. So Nibbana also not a person, not a self, not a God, it is also non-self in that sense. Now Nibbana. Now different terms are given use for Nibbana. So let us little explore that area. The The term that we sometimes familiar is called Nibbana. But not only the term Nibbana, but there are typically around 33 terms we can find out in the Samyutta Nikaya. There is one called Asankhata Samyutta in the Samyutta Nikaya. So there are different terminologies are introduced to explain Nibbana. What we call the Asankhata Dhatu, starting with the Asankhata, the unconditioned. So Buddha explained, I will teach you the unconditioned and the path leading to the unconditioned. So I am going to teach you about the Asankhata and the path leading to Asankhata. So what is the unconditioned? The destruction of lust, the destruction of hatred, the destruction of delusion. This is called the unconditioned. Ragakkhayo, dosakkhayo, mohakkhayo. So the complete eradication of the lust, complete destruction of the lust, complete destruction of hatred, complete destruction of delusion. So this is one definition of the Asankhata, Nibbana, we can say. So that means complete eradication of the defilements. Raga, dosa, moha, complete destruction. So that's why the Arahant is called a Khinasava. So in that sense, the Arahant is the one completely free from all the defilements, so we can say he is the one fully attained Nibbana. Others may be partially, maybe Sotapanna, Sakadagami, Anagami. So they are partially attained, but Arahant is the one fully attained, fully in the unconditioned. Because his mind is completely free from all the defilements. There is no any remainder. So this is one interesting definition that the Buddha given here. So Asankhata Dhatu is not a place. Rather, it is complete freedom from all the defilements. Complete destruction of lust, complete destruction of hatred, complete destruction of delusion. So what is the path leading to the unconditioned? So there are many paths. It is not just one path. There are many paths introduced in this Asankhata Samyutta. So mindfulness directed to the body, kayagata sati, is one path. Serenity and insight, that is samatha and vipassana, that is another path. Concentration with thought and examination, concentration without thought, concentration with examination only, concentration without thought and examination. So that means with vitakka vichara, with only vitakka and no vichara, with only vitakka, there is vichara but no vitakka. Completely there is no vitakka and vichara. So these are different kinds of concentration types. And one can entertain, enjoy different jhanic experience. That is also giving a path to the unconditioned. And then the emptiness concentration, signless concentration, undirected concentration. That means the sunyata, animitta, appanihita. So those are also path leading to the unconditioned. The four establishments of mindfulness, satipatthana, also a path leading to the unconditioned. Four right strivings, sammapadhana, also giving a path to the unconditioned. The four bases of spiritual power, iddipada, that is also a path towards the enlightenment. Five spiritual faculties, indriya, that is also a path to the unconditioned. The five powers, that means the pancha bala, that is also a path leading to the enlightenment. The seven factors of enlightenment, the satta bojjhanga, that is also towards the nibbana, and then the noble eightfold path, arya attangika magga, so that is also a path leading to the enlightenment or to the unconditioned. So you can see, most of these are known to you and familiar to you, these at least the terms. So different paths are there. So different ways are there. And there are certain amount of overlappings are also there. So all are leading to the unconditioned, to complete eradication of defilements. So when someone is practicing any of these, there is a significant reduction in lust, hatred, delusion. So all are helping to reduce the defilements. Ultimately, the complete destruction of lust, hatred, delusion, that is the unconditioned. Now, 33 terms introduced in the Asankata Samyutta, I'll just simply note them. The Asankata, unconditioned. Then Anatta, there is no any inclination, uninclined. So the mind is very much in a very balanced state, uninclined. Then taintless, anasava, there is no taints at all. Then the truth, satcha. And then fasho, para. So typically we are parangama and parayana vagga, all that terms coming from the para, talking about the fasho. And then the subtle, nipuna. It's a subtle experience. The very difficult to see, sududdasa. It's not easy to understand, it's not easy to comprehend. So in that term, it is called sududdasa. Then unaging. So when someone is there, there is one can't feel any aging. Ajara. Then the stable, dhuang. So it's a stable experience. Then undisintegrating, apalokita. The unmanifest, anidassana. The unproliferated, nippapancha. The peaceful, santa. The deathless, amata. The sublime, panita. The auspicious, siva. The secure, khema. The destruction of craving, tanhakkaya. The wonderful, acharya. The amazing, abhuta. The unailing, anitika. The unailing state, anitika dhamma. Then the common term, nibbana. And then that we can literally translate as quenching. The unafflicted, abhyapajya, dispassion, viraga, purity, suddhi, freedom, mutti, the unadhesive, analaya, the island, deepa, the shelter, lena, the asylum, tana, the refuge, sarana, and the destination, parayana. So altogether there are three terms giving different facets of nibbana. So sometimes we might know only few areas, few meanings, but we can see Buddha has given a fairly comprehensive facet, so we can see different viewpoints of the nibbana, and different paths are also introduced. Interestingly, all are elements. We can say there is no person involved, there is no self involved when one is experiencing. All are non-self. Okay, with that I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. There are a little bit more to explain, but anyway I think this is enough for today. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu. I'd like to invite Radhika. Feel free to unmute. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Let me ask you, may I ask you a question? You sent, one day when I was listening to you, you sent a link to the chat of your talk you gave for the Poya Day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And may I ask you a question about that?
Can.
It relates to this thing too. So you say, now you can correct me if I understood it wrong, but my understanding was there are the three characteristics that we are trying to penetrate: impermanence, suffering, and not self. And depending on the nature of the yogi or the past birth practices or whatever, some may use the impermanence to break through ignorance. Correct. And some may use suffering, and some may use not self.
Correct.
So you use the words, and this is where I may have got it wrong: animitta vimokha, apanihita vimokha, and sunnata vipoka.
Vimokha. Actually, at first we call it as a vimokha mukha, kind of an opening. It's not yet you are fully there, but this is the opening, kind of a door. Door is there. So you have to open the door and go inside, like. So the terminology is like that. Vimokkha Mukha is the door towards the Nibbana, we can say. Complete freedom. There are three doors. There are
so
three doors,
it,
yeah.
It is saying the entrance to
exactly.
Nibbana.
Exactly, yes.
And so some yogis will use the entrance of Anumittha.
Exactly.
Some may use Apanihitta and some may use Sunnatha.
Correct.
Now, I had read, and I may be wrong again, so you can correct me, that there are some yogis who are very strong on Samatha and they are using what they call Samathayana. They start with Samatha and then go to Vipassana.
Correct.
And then there are some who start with Vipassana and go to Samatha. They are more questioning type. They are kind of
inquiring.
People who are wisdom yogis and they tend to be ditti. Their character is you know, always questioning.
Mm-hmm.
And then it could be also Samatha Vipassana, Yuganatha, Gupanatha, where they do it together, tandem. That's the second type. And then the third type is where they're using pure Vipassana. And I don't know, some word for Suddha Vipassana. And a lot of different categories of, like what you were telling, you know, the seven jnanas and something else and something else. But basically, from what I had read and from your thing, I understood that the ones who use the suffering and the entrance of Apanihitta are more Vipassana, and the ones who are using not self are even more stronger Vipassana and philosophical and that kind of a person.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that correct? Are there three parts, or is it only Samatha Vipassana and Vipassana Samatha, or Samatha or the Yuganatha that are being taught right now? And is the pure method of like only Vipassana, even though in the Katpatthana Sutra, the Buddha says this is the one and only way, or this is the direct path, it's a direct path. It's we don't have to have the Samatha. Is that true? Am I understanding this correct?
We can't say that you can ignore Samatha totally altogether and you can achieve everything through mere Vipassana. But actually, even for Vipassana, you need certain amount of a concentration of the mind. So basically, that's why even one say with this Vipassana, while one practices Vipassana, certain amount of a concentration being developed. Probably it may be true that one may start with Vipassana, but once he's continuing, certain amount of concentration naturally start developing. So ultimately the concentration and wisdom both are instrumental in this whole understanding. So therefore Samatha and Vipassana is one way we can generally say, okay, you need certain amount of tranquility, you need certain amount of investigation. So that is leading.
Yes.
That is leading towards the enlightenment. So that may be an acceptable statement. And similarly, the yoga. So
one moment.
One moment. So all these are still we are developing certain skills. Say you are developing tranquility, you are developing wisdom, and probably you are parallelly developing both. So likewise, all these are still we are developing certain skills. Now, when you are developing these skills at one level, you may reach the door, you may reach the entrance.
Right.
So these are three common entrances. So either you practice Samatha, Vipassana. So ultimately, when they are coming to a kind of a balance, a certain amount of a culmination, you have to reach these entrances. There are three entrances. So the entrances are quite common, irrespective of your technique. So ultimately, you have to reach the entrance, signless, and then the desireless and the emptiness. So these are the entrances, and one of them becomes your prominent entrance. Say, for example, if your understanding is more towards the impermanence, you may reach the signless entrance. If your understanding is more into the suffering, unsatisfactoriness, you may reach the entrance of desires. If you are more into the non-self, you may reach the emptiness entrance. And through that, then you are able to enter into the, we can say, the unconditioned realm. So, to the Nibbana. So, that is also, I mean, we can't say it's a full-fledged Nibbana. Still, it's a kind of a Tadanga Nibbuti, where to the amount of wisdom what you have gained, you have certain amount of quenching, certain amount of calm experience, certain amount of reduction in defilements. So while further and further you need to practice now, so that you are consolidating in that experience, familiarizing with that experience. Now we don't need to say it is an entrance, but you are developing that concentration. Signless concentration is what you are developing. Say desireless concentration is what you are developing. Emptiness concentration is what you are developing. Now the terminology might change because you have entered into the signless and now you are developing it. You are enhancing it. You are consolidating it. Something like that.
So right at this stage where we are, it's okay if we are trying all three?
Yeah, definitely, because you know, I mean, we can't pre-plan. So you can't say, okay, I don't want to enter through the signless. I definitely want to enter through the emptiness. So let me forget about signless and I am only concerned about the emptiness. So that is not a proper argument, because this have a fair relationship also. Because you know, in certain suttas, Buddha say, anicca sanyino bhikkave anatta sanya santhati. So when one develops the perception of impermanence, naturally he might get on to the emptiness as well, or the non-self as well. So the impermanence seems to be more a common, or rather we can say an early entrance. Kind of an early entrance. But sometimes if one missed that early entrance, as a result of certain influence coming from that, he may reach the second entrance or the third entrance. But still, certain amount of impermanence is kind of an essential part. One may understand the impermanence to some extent, but not yet enough to enter into the signless, maybe. But that understanding may evolve towards emptiness, maybe, to non-self, maybe. Ultimately, probably he is more emphasized or more conversant with the non-self, and he might enter through the emptiness. So therefore, all these, by the way, very much like beyond our control. So probably it's our duty is to continue our practice. So the evolution may happen within the mind based on our practice. It may be possible that you are giving some emphasis toward non-self. It may be possible. But anyway, all three doors are available and all are valid. We can't say one is better than the other, because what the emphasis is to eradicate defilements. So more you understand any of these, the defilements become weaker and weaker. More you're dwelling in any of these, the weaker will be the defilements.
So in that Bodhatta Sutra, why do they say that we shouldn't be going, it's not through animitta and it's not through this, it's some non-reaction, I don't know the Pali word, a kupana or something? Why does that Bodhatta Sutra say that, when the animitta is one entrance?
I can't remember the
Bodhatta Sutra kind of rejects three of the methods and says that what the one we should be using is the one, the non-reaction part, which is a kupana or something. I don't know the Pali word, but the English word is non-reaction. Like, you know, you work towards equanimity without reacting to the pleasant or the unpleasant. So why I'm understanding that Bodhatta Sutra wrong?
No. Bodhatta Sutta can't be wrong, but your understanding could be wrong.
That's what I'm saying. I'm understanding it wrong, right?
Let us take the... we'll take Godatha Sutta.
I'm saying I'm understanding it wrong.
Yes, you can. Your understanding might be wrong. So we'll take Godatha Sutta at another time to discuss.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. So then we are able to clarify everything, and we'll take that also for our discussion.
Thank you very much, Swami Vansa. Much merit to you.
Teruvan Sarnai.
Thank you. I'd like to invite John for the next question.
Yeah. Swami Vansa, thank you so much for your good teaching. This is John.
Yeah. And how are you?
I hope you're doing well.
Yes.
I'm doing good. I hope it's not raining too much today.
It's raining. So we are... I don't know, yes. Certain predictions are there. We might experience kind of a typhoon. Is it the typhoon? Kind of a, what you call?
Yeah, I saw cyclone.
Cyclone, yeah, cyclone.
Forming somewhere.
Yeah.
Near the Bay of Bengal or something.
Yeah, so I heard that certain, certain flights are also diverted to some other airports, and something is going on. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, all the best to you. I hope you all do well with the rain. I know it's difficult. But I hope all is well. I just wanted to make a couple observations and see what your thoughts would be.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking up. I looked up on ChatGPT. The nature about it's an artificial intelligence search engine that I looked up the Buddhist belief of the element of thinking, and the one way, another way they interpreted element was the nature of thinking. So I wondered, you know, maybe that would be another way you could look at these various, lust element, or the element of thinking, or the element, consciousness element. One way you could look at that maybe it would be the nature of consciousness, the nature of thinking, which is something that's pre-self. Before you could attach a self to that, there's thinking that can arise without a self, without clinging to without claiming that thinking is mine.
Mm-hmm.
What would you think about that as a way of looking at this as far as, why is the Buddha saying, element, but maybe it's because it's all these things that we could cling to actually are, it could be seen as non-self.
That's actually kind of a direction we can give to the mind, because sometimes we tend to take it so personal, and we assume, say, for there are certain thoughts are going on in the mind, so we are tempted to consider them as my thoughts, and I am responsible for them, and why I am thinking like that. So likewise, we start probably criticizing ourselves, or we become simply a victim of those thoughts, and we emphasize those thoughts, or we attribute a very important value to those thoughts. So likewise, we mess up with the whole thing. But on such occasion, understanding, okay, Buddha has mentioned, okay, they are merely thoughts, they are merely elements. So give that that separation from that. So basically, we were tangled in that, but once we realize, or once we remember that Buddha's teaching, okay, Buddha has mentioned that they are merely elements, so why should I worry about too much? Why should I take such kind of an importance here? So because they are merely elements.
Yeah.
Help us to disengage. Help us to avoid that grasping. So that is a good reminder for ourselves, definitely. Netam mama neso hamasmi na meso attati. Probably that is the typical popular statement Buddha introduced during the practice. Netam mama neso hamasmi na meso attati. It is not me, it is not mine, it is not myself.
Yes. And I Yeah, thank you so much for your teaching. It's so wonderful, and all that you're bringing to this. And I guess also there was one other thing. I can't think of the other thing I was going to add.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, just the one thing I was also going to say is that it's so persuasive. You know, when we think of, you know, we can easily see water element or earth element or, you know, water, earth, fire.
Yeah.
Fire, wind.
Yeah.
You can easily see that those are not self. And
correct.
Yet our bodies are made up of these things. But as we look at everything as element, you know, even thinking as an element, it seems like a really skillful way to think of all that we can perceive, all these different parts of us that we think of as ourselves, our consciousness, and so forth.
Yeah,
looking at that as just like water or earth, it's
exactly.
just something that exists in the universe that we all share, and it's not personally, you know, I can't say that it's me, you know. So,
yeah, that is also emphasized. Probably you can remember.
Beautiful the way the Buddha uses element as a way of describing that these are not self.
Yeah, correct. So basically, another sutta is that the Maha Hatti Padopama Sutta. Venerable Sariputta suggests, okay, you can develop your meditation like Patavi Dhatu. You can develop your meditation like Apo Dhatu. You can develop your meditation like Tejo Dhatu. You can develop your meditation like Vayo Dhatu. You can develop your meditation like Akasa Dhatu. Another attribute, another kind of a way of looking at things, because your Patavi Dhatu, when you are developing, so it can withstand, it is so stable, and you are maintaining your meditation properly, stay in a consistent way. And on the other hand, when you are considering of the water, you are becoming more flexible, you are adjustable, your meditation is continuing in that way. Then the Tejo, so the old defilements are being burnt and you are eradicating the defilements. Maybe Vayo, so you are not being hindered by anything, you are penetrating things. And the Akasa, the space, you are not established in anything. So likewise, so these elements are used at different suttas from different angles for us to communicate a different meaning very skillfully. And all we can say are all skillful means, helping us, guiding us towards the unconditioned, towards the eradication of the defilements.
Yes. Well, thank you. It's a beautiful teaching, and I appreciate it so much.
Yeah. You're welcome.
All best to you.
Yeah. Teruvan Sannai. Teruvan Sannai.
Thank you. I should invite Geshan for the next question.
Teruvan Sannai, Swami Nolansu.
Yeah, Teruvan Sannai.
So, just for clarification on this particular question that you also just mentioned, something that I have been thinking for as well, what you mentioned to John, what Buddha also stated that the thoughts that arise in us doesn't belong to us, kind of, because the thoughts merely arises.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, I agree with that, the thought arises, but when we as individuals give some oxygen into that thought, you go into one or two stages or steps ahead.
Correct.
And then realize, oh, this is a thought. Now you have entangled with the thought. And in that context, now you have created certain type of involvement Sankara, if I may correct it. And so at that point in time, can you say these thoughts arise? It doesn't belong to me. I shouldn't be a part. How would you sort of rectify that? Because at that point in time, you have sort of contribute towards that thought that just arises.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that is still, I mean, that in another way you can say we are deluded at that level. So certain amount of ignorance is operating in the mind. So I am operating under the influence of such ignorance, and I am someone at that moment. I am someone. So when I become someone, so I become responsible also. So then the outcome is I am karmically bound. So I am responsible for what I am doing right now, because I have manifested as a person, I have manifested as a man, woman, whatever. And then I am doing certain action influenced by all that. So therefore, a potential is there to gather karma. So in that level, even though we simply say non-self, but the person who is going through that already achieve it as a self, as a person, as an individual. So he already manifested as someone. Now he can't disclaim. That's why I was mentioning. Now you can't artificially impose these teachings and use it as an excuse. Because when you are ignorant of the scenario, when you are doing something in an ignorant mind, you already manifest as a person. You are no more in the non-person or non-self level, but you already have become someone. Being someone, now you do something. So now the karma is there. Now the karmic potential is there. You are karmically bound. But when someone is practicing, say someone is practicing Vipassana, and now his mind is completely unbound, there is no any kind of an attachment to anything, his mind is completely independent, still he can do something. But even though he is doing something, there is no any internal ignorance operating, rather he is doing at an impersonal level, non-self level, so there is no any karmic responsibility. There is no karmically bound any potential to come. So we can say, even though he is working, even though he is talking, it's a mere talk, a mere word, a mere action, but there is no person behind, so there is no any karmic influence coming towards. That's why in the later, probably people introduce that called kriya chitta. These are merely kind of activities, but there is no person behind, so there is no any karma being gathered.
Okay, I understand very well. Thank you, Bhante. And yeah. Then my follow-up question for it. Our day-to-day lives, basically, you have to work. There are certain actions that you got to perform because of the job duties and etc. Sometimes you have to create certain aspects, make sure that the process works, and those creations may be financial motivations, maybe because of the nature of your work as well. And in that context, you know, you have to sort of, the thoughts arises, you evaluate it, and then you sort of, of course you give oxygen simply because that is the nature of the work that you're supposed to sort of work as well, and you perform and the results are good. for somewhat as well, but isn't that, of course, you know, just going through the process of samsara, and I thought of asking that question as well. I thought of, because this is something that you struggle sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why Buddha give a kind of a criteria. Okay, whenever you are doing something, try to do what is wholesome and not to harm yourself, not to harm the others. And basically, that's why he is introducing, okay, this is good, this is bad. So basically, that is the kammasakata sammaditti. So he's introducing a fairly kind of a reasonable, harmless list of activities. Okay, you can engage with these things, try to avoid the bad things. So because you are operating as a person, as an individual, a certain amount of ignorance is always operating. You are always manifesting as a person. So definitely you are karmically bound, and you have to, so these activities bear fruits. So don't kill, don't steal, don't engage in sexual misconduct, don't lie. So don't use any intoxicants. So likewise, he is giving this a kind of a framework for us to work, so that even though we are ignorantly working, still certain amount of escape is available, certain amount of facilities available, because we are not doing anything wrong. So Buddha has particularly mentioned, okay, these are the good works, or these are the morally wholesome activities we want to get engaged. So you follow that, you believe that, you do in that. So even though you are operating, they are wholesome activities. So ultimately, the results also become more wholesome. And even though you as a person manifested during that activity, still you are getting some fruits. They are not bad fruits. They are not painful fruits. They are useful fruits, we can say. They may be helpful for you to continue the samsaric journey. But Buddha doesn't stop there. So he introduces the supramundane sammaditti, lokottara or arya sammaditti as well. So that is where we were discussing, very much like today. So all these teachings are very much into the supramundane type of sammaditti, lokottara sammaditti. So one is asked to develop the wisdom, seeing things as they truly are. So that is another level we are talking. So both are actually valid. So you can't immediately step into this supramundane sammaditti without having any establishment in the mundane type of sammaditti. So the mundane type of sammaditti becomes your norm, becomes your base. Then only one can have a potential to get into the supramundane kind of sammaditti. That doesn't mean that you have to perfect the mundane samadhitti, then only you can step into the supramundane samadhitti. Rather, your motivation is to do good, be in the moral side, be more ethical. So likewise, that the wholesome side is more developed, your mind is inclined. And as a development of that, further development of that, you are now stepping into the more sublime, more supramundane kind of a samadhitti.
Very good. Thank you very much, Thirunal Saranai Bante. Also, through Jennifer, I send my contact information to John. I hope you have received that as well. So, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for the time.
Yeah, Thirunal Saranai.
Any other questions, Bante, on your side?
No, no questions from our side today.
Okay, I don't have anything else on my side.
Okay, then. Fine, then we'll wind up the session. So today we have spent some time discussing Dhamma and going through certain suttas, and all the merits what we have accumulated, we share with all the celestial beings, with all the past relatives and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to understand the Buddha's teaching and to attain path, fruition, Nibbana. We'll recite the traditional verses. එතාවතාච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සබ්බේ දේවා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා. එතාවතාච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සම්මේ බුතා අනුමෝදන්තු සම්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා. එතාවතාච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සම්මේ සත්තා අනුමෝදන්තු සම්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා. ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහින්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු සාසනං. ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහින්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං. ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහින්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මං පරං. ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ. ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ. ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ. ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා. පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා. ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා. සාදු සාදු සාදු.
Thank you, Bhante.
Teruvan Sannai.